This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
This is the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning.
And there's a high fly ball. That's hit to deep left field. It might go.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and data comm needs.
And it's gone! A slammer for Nolan Arenado!
Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here's Tom Ackerman on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Coming to you from Jupiter, Florida, the spring training home of the St. Louis Cardinals. Great to be along with you. Sports on a Sunday morning has been doing this for a long time, originating from spring training, and it's great to be down here. I've been here for a week. Got here last Sunday, thanks to Kevin Wheeler for jumping in for me while I was traveling last Sunday. And this Sunday, we have a lot to get to. In fact, let's get right to Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol, who just addressed the media. Sonny Gray will make the start today against the Marlins here at Roger Dean Chevrolet Stadium, and he will make a very important start here soon. Katie Wu of The Athletic with the first question.
Oliver, do you know who your opening day starter is going to be?
I do. Yeah, Sonny Gray will take that start.
What went into that decision?
He's our dude.
That's a great
question. Have you guys purposely kind of brought him along slowly this spring?
I feel like we've brought everybody along based on, like, we've truly individualized it, whether that meant backfield games or not. Like, we've brought everybody along in a way where we felt it was best from a ready day one of regular season and health-wise. So I feel like Dusty and his group have done a really nice job of that. And there's days where you see it where guys from minor league camp are in a game over some of the guys that we could get an inning out of, but it's based on making sure that we break here healthy with as many guys as possible. We'll do some back-to-backs this week with our relievers, and you'll see them pitching a game and their back-to-back will happen on the backfield. Just, we can control those at-bats. We can control the pitch count. They don't have to, if we only want them throwing 15 and the guy has an 8-pitch at-bat and takes them to 22, you can't control that in a live setting. So even structuring their back-to-backs in a controlled environment for the day two of it, things like that, yeah.
Sonny had 204 strikeouts. He was your ace all season, but his second half wasn't what the first half was. Did that wear down?
That'd be a good question for him. I don't want to answer that for him.
Yeah.
Ali, how was
the conversation with Sonny when he told him? How did that take place?
He said thank you, gave me a hug, and said, let's go.
Was that in September of last year?
Better be something.
Or was it recent?
That's a good one, Derek.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Imagine there's some, I mean, obviously, opening day is exciting, but like with him getting that start after missing it last year because of the hamstring injury, there's got to be some added emotion, right?
Yeah, we obviously wanted that for him last year. So being able to do it this year is awesome. But he's feeling good and he's ready for it.
How did you look at his last year? John mentioned the second half. I mean, like, you look at his baseball card numbers and they're good, they're solid. But you look at his, like, below the surface metrics and they're,
yeah, if you
like
look at his FIP and yeah, his best he's had probably in 8 years. Obviously, there's some solving for the home runs. Like, you can talk through that as much as you want. But some of the underlying stuff, and to your point, the metrics that matter, he had a very good year. So,
how does he build on that? Yeah, he had some career highs in there.
Yeah, he did. Be sunny,
okay.
Which is, he's never going to be satisfied. He's going to look at every single piece of information. He's going to look at his routine, how he approaches his day, the days in between, how he communicates, how he does his feedback loop post game to make sure he's not missing it. Like, so just being himself allows him to do that.
That's Oliver Marmol. You can tell a windy morning here in Jupiter, and it has kind of been the norm. The wind is a nice warm breeze. There's a little bit of cloud cover here right now, but the Cardinals will be playing the Marlins, and they'll be the visitor today. The Cardinals will be the first to bat, and then Sonny will get after it in the bottom of the first against the Marlins. And as you heard right there, he will be no shocker. He'll be the opening day starter. A couple of other news items from that visit with the media. Marmol does know in his mind who he wants his five-man rotation to be. He's not ready to reveal that yet. He says there will be one more discussion behind closed doors about that, and then they should have some information about what that is going to look like. Basically, right now you have seven people competing for those five spots in the rotation. If you were to roll right now, if I were to take a guess as to what they were going to do, I would say it'll go Gray, Fetty, Michaelis, Mats, Palante, something along those lines, with Liberatore going to the bullpen and McGreevy going to Memphis. But we'll see what they end up doing. McGreevy's had a phenomenal spring, and so has Liberatore. But they do have the familiarity with Mats as a starter, and if he is healthy, they'll probably go that route. And Palante, who had a bit of a bumpy ride yesterday, actually gathered himself and finished very strong, going five innings yesterday against the Blue Jays. And Palante does what he does. He keeps the ball on the ground. He's great against lefties, and he is much improved against righties. And they like Palante as a starter, but they have not announced any decision yet, and they are going to discuss that rotation behind the scenes. Phil Maton is going to throw. In fact, he's throwing right now on the backfield. He is the new Cardinal acquired. We'll talk to John Mozeliak about that at 11:30. And Jordan Walker came out of the game yesterday very well. He had three at-bats yesterday, struck out twice, three plate appearances, struck out twice, walked, and his knee feels good today to the point where he's going to be hitting on the backfields today, so they feel good about how Walker came out of yesterday's contest, his first in 11 days after suffering some inflammation in his knee, stepping on a sprinkler head in West Palm Beach back on March 4th. Cardinals lineup today going up against this Marlins team looks like this. Mason Wynn is going to lead off and play shortstop today. Batting second will be Lars Nootbaar, who hit a home run yesterday. Wilson Contreras, and Nootbaar's in left. Wilson Contreras is the DH batting third. Brendan Donovan's the cleanup hitter playing second base. Ivan Herrera's, who had a good spring, he's the catcher batting fifth. Alec Burleson hit a home run yesterday. He's batting sixth. He's the first baseman this afternoon. Nolan Gorman will play third base and bat seventh. Victor Scott in center field. Michael Ciani in right field. The 8 and 9 hitters in the order. Big difference in their spring numbers. Scott hitting .345 in Grapefruit League play. Ciani .061. We'll talk to John Mozeliak about the decision-making when it comes to spring stats and specifically that center field position, and a lot more with President of Baseball Operations at 11:30. Coming up next, we'll talk about the bracket. It will be revealed at 5 o'clock Central today, and Jerry Palm of CBS has been projecting it for quite a while. We'll touch base with him next. Sports on a Sunday morning, coming to you from Jupiter, Florida, and the Stiefel Stiefel Sports Studio.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Our producer is Drew Young back in the studios of KMOX in St. Louis. Tom Ackerman in our KMOX Broadcast Center across the street from Roger Dean Chevrolet Stadium in Jupiter, Florida. And joining us with his eye on the bracket and the conference title games today is CBS Sports' Jerry Palm. This is a tradition that we have Jerry on the show on Selection Sunday. Good morning, Jerry.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing? As we get ready for this, is an exciting time for you?
Yeah. You know, it's always good to, see, look forward to seeing where the committee thinks everybody's, should be and where your own personal team is. So, yeah. It's the culmination of months of work to get to this point for me. I'm trying to predict what a 13-member committee is going to do. It's a lot more art than science, although there's a fair amount
sure.
of science.
No, absolutely. And you do a fine job of it. And you and I have talked for a long time and have known each other for a long time. As a bracketology expert, it is not the easiest thing in the world, but you've done a wonderful job here. Of course, my heart is with the Indiana Hoosiers, and I see you have us as the last four in at the moment. Is that still the case with West Virginia, San Diego State, Boise State?
Correct, yeah. Going into today, and there's five championship games today. If you're a team that close to the bottom of the bracket, the one you're watching is the American Conference, which is UAB and Memphis. And UAB is not getting in the tournament without beating Memphis, but Memphis is going either way. So that's what we call a bid stealer. UAB is a potential bid stealer. If they get in, someone pops off the bottom of the bracket. In my bracket, that's Boise State. The committee's bracket may be different.
What's the scenario for Xavier to get in, Jerry?
Well, the committee just has to like them better than, one of the teams I have in. I've got them as they're done playing. There's nothing they can do. I have them as the first team out. So basically the scenario where they get in is the committee decides that they belong in. There's nothing left for anybody to do but wait and hope the committee sees it your way.
And for Texas and North Carolina, if you're holding out hope for them, they're pretty much done, aren't they?
Well, Carolina definitely is done. I don't think there's ever been a team that has more conclusively proven they're not an NCAA tournament team than North Carolina. They played 13 quad one games, most of those against tournament teams, and won one of them. That's a pretty poor record against the kind of teams that are in the NCAA tournament. So, North Carolina really doesn't have a case to be in. Texas would be interesting. They've got 15 losses, which is a lot, and five of them are quad two, and three of those were home games to teams that they were competing with for a spot in the bracket. But they've got some nice wins, too. They played in the SEC. They got a good schedule. They've got some nice wins. But if you throw away their quad four games, which are, basically the teams that from the much smaller conferences, really, they're 12-15. And while I don't think the committee looks at your record against the top three quadrants specifically, I also don't think it's a coincidence that only one team has ever gotten in that was even two games below 500 against that group of teams, and certainly none that were three. So I'm not optimistic for Texas either, but the committee might look at the sheer number of quality opponents they played, and then they beat a handful of them, and think, well, that's probably better than maybe Boise State, who didn't play as many.
CBS Sports bracketologist Jerry Palm is with us. From a local standpoint, SLU cannot get in. They had to win the A-10 tournament to do it. We're going to hear from their coach, Josh Schertz. He will join me right after you at the bottom of the hour here around 10:30. But for Mizzou and Illinois, representing the two most popular and best conferences in America, the SEC and the Big Ten, they are very much in play. Where do you see them, Jerry?
Yeah, I think I've got Mizzou as a six this morning. They had a great year, I think, for them, because they had 0-18 last year in the SEC, and had a great turnaround to get to, you know, now they're a borderline top 25 team, going to be in the NCAA tournament. I actually have them as a 7 today. So, yeah, it's, you know, what a great year for them. And then Illinois, I've got in the middle of the bracket as well. So, yeah, it's you know, been a rough year for Illinois because of, you know, they had like the flu go through the team, and it got so bad at one point that they weren't even doing handshake lines for a couple of games because they didn't want to spread anything. But yeah, I've got Illinois as an 8, Missouri as a 7. You know, those are, Missouri's in a little better position to try and advance beyond the first weekend as a 7, because those two seeds are not juggernauts. They're good teams. They're very good teams, but they're not the kind of juggernauts that you might see if you have to play a 1 in the second round like Illinois could.
Yeah, your current 1s and 2s, so you have Auburn in the South, Duke in the East, Houston in the Midwest, Florida in the West. The 2 seeds, accordingly, Michigan State in the South, Alabama in the East, Tennessee in the Midwest, St. John's, I think they're dangerous in the West. And you also say that that Tennessee-Florida game, the SEC title game, could determine the 1.
Yeah, I think it, the winner of the Tennessee-Florida game should be the 4th number 1 seed. Tennessee will still have one more loss than Florida, but they will have beaten them 2 times out of 3. They've got more good wins than Florida. And I think that's enough to make up for the extra loss. But the committee has already, first of all, made that decision. They would have made that decision last night. Today they're probably spending most of the day bracketing. And then they would have contingency brackets based on the results of the 5 games today. You know, obviously they have to have one for the American, because if Memphis wins, it's one thing. And if UAB wins, they've definitely got to put them in. So that'll be one. There could be a contingency for the SEC game. For, you know, the Ivy League game, it's one team or the other, and they might be in the same spot in the bracket or not, but they'll have to deal with that. So, yeah, they have contingency brackets for probably all of these games with the possible exception of the Big Ten. But and then they just watch the games, and they get a winner, and they throw out any bracket that they had with the loser. So they eventually whittle it down to 1.
That's really good insight, Jerry. And then you have SIUE as a 16 against Houston. Tough assignment. Now, SIUE has a phenomenal player in Rayshon Taylor. He is excellent and could be fun for people to see for the first time. The problem there, Jerry, is if they play Houston, it feels like Houston has 5 Rayshon Taylors.
Yeah, and all 5 of those guys are really good defenders, too. I don't know if Taylor is or not. I just assume he's a really good player, but you know, Houston's calling card has always been defense. So, you know, Taylor could be, you know, a really great player, and you're playing Houston, and they're going to handcuff you. So he's going to have his hands full today, or when they play, assuming they play. But it's you know, SIUE getting in is a great story. I believe it's their first time in the tournament. They haven't even been really in Division I for, you know, that long as an eligible team. So, yeah, it's tremendous. I was excited for them to see that they got in.
Yeah, absolutely. Jerry Palm is with us. Jerry, final thing, when you look at all of this and you're putting all these pieces together, is there a team or teams that you had, let's say, in that 7, 8, 9, 10 range that you think could be dangerous, could make a run?
Well, yeah, actually, we talked about 2 of them a little bit, because I think Mizzou could, and I think Illinois could. You know, the thing about Illinois in particular is, you know, they've had some big moments, but they had such a disjointed season that, you know, the NCAA tournament may feel like a fresh start to them. And we've seen, you know, the Illinois that went up to Michigan and annihilated them is capable of winning a couple of games. They just, that team is, you know, the peak of Illinois is really dangerous. So I think those two have a chance to do something. But you understand, if you're an 8, you got to go through a 1. And it's going to be hard to do that with this particular class of 1 seeds. If you're a 2, though, then, you know, you may have a little, you know, I don't know, I guess easier time of it. But another team I keep an eye on is BYU, which was the hottest team in the country until they got beat the other day, finally. But they'd won something like 9 or 10 in a row. I actually was at the game of their last loss, which was at Cincinnati in February. And they looked really bad, especially in the second half of that game. And then they just went on a tear, went from playing themselves onto the bubble to off the bubble to the top half of the bracket. They lost finally in the semifinal of the conference tournament, but that's a dangerous team, too, that's really feeling good about itself.
Jerry, you do a heck of a job. You're the first place I go when I need a bracket projection. You are CBS Sports Bracketologist at CBSSports.com. All the best to you. Thank you so much for making yourself available on this busy Selection Sunday.
Oh, anytime, Tom. Thanks.
Good to hear from Jerry Palm of CBS Sports. When we come back, Josh Schertz, the head coach of the St. Louis Billikens. Sports on a Sunday morning coming to you from Jupiter, Florida on KMOX.
Here's Tom Ackerman on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Coming to you from the Cardinals spring training home of Jupiter, Florida, we are also the home of the St. Louis Billikens. And SLU basketball coach Josh Schertz is with us. The Billiken Report is sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. Coach, good morning. Thanks so much for being with us.
Appreciate it, Tom. I'm a little jealous. Weather's probably a slightly better there than it is here.
It's a little bit better. I heard it was snowing a little bit early this morning, which is crazy because it's going to be in the 70s later in the week. That's the way it goes in St. Louis, no doubt. You lost to Loyola 72-64 in the quarterfinals of the A-10 tournament, moving to 19-14 overall as you sit right now. Just reflect, if you would, on that game and watching that come to an end. I know that there's a lot of work that goes into the season, and that had to have been a tough one. At the same time, a realization that you have set a foundation for what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I think, every ending of the season, you know, unless you win your last game, you know, it stinks. I mean, it's a crash landing. Nobody expects to lose. I mean, you go into these single elimination tournaments, and you expect to win. I've walked into locker rooms, lost the national championship game, and it was devastating. I remember walking in the Indiana State locker room last year at the NIT final, and that was as gutted as I've ever seen a locker room. I mean, guys were sprawled out, sobbing. I mean, it's never, no matter how far you play, no matter how long you go, the end is always incredibly painful, and particularly if you end in a scenario where you come up short in that last game. So, it was a tough loss, frustrating for us in a lot of ways, a little bit of a, kind of like our season. You know, we came out and credit Loyola, they really took it to us early. They were super physical. I thought, you know, we really were on our heels on both ends of the floor, and they controlled most of the first half. I think we cut it down to five. They made a three, put it back up to eight at halftime, and you know, we got down 12 at the under 12 media, and then we did what we do. I've done all year. You know, I thought we showed a lot of toughness, resilience, cut it back to two, put ourselves right in the game, and it was a 3-point game in the final minutes, and we had our chances. You know, we missed two front ends of a 1-1. We missed a layup. We gave up an offensive rebound, led to a three. I mean, there was a variety of plays in money time, and we didn't make them, and they did. And ultimately, in this league, those are the small margins that separate winning and losing. The gaps between teams are not big. You very rarely see teams get blown out in this league. The margins are incredibly small, and you got to be great in those moments of truth, and we weren't. Loyola was better, just like BCU was better than Loyola the last 5 minutes yesterday, which they went from being down one to winning the game. But, I think, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of seeds planted here in year one. I think this group did. I'm really appreciative of this group of guys. What they did, the work, the foundation they laid in terms of how we prepare, how we compete inside the game, the resilience, toughness, and with a group that really early in the year, I would have said, man, I don't, you know, pretty soft, pretty disconnected. By the end of the year, we were, I thought, incredibly tough, incredibly resilient, really competitive, cared about each other, and seeing that growth coming together was great for us. And, you know, we'll see today. I mean, there's a chance. I think it's a coin flip if we get in the NIT. If we do, then our season continues. If we don't, then I think we're gonna shut it down. As you know, we've been massaging this across the finish line as it is with the amount of guys we have.
Well, I'm certain that you would want to play with pride in that NIT. I totally understand that. And you have two players in particular in Isaiah Swope and Gibson Jimerson who have had tremendous careers. Let's start with Jimerson, who Loyola was able to hold off the sheet there. They really worked him, but he has had an unbelievable, I mean, what can you say about a guy any more than we already have about the all-time leading scorer at St. Louis University?
Yeah, holding off was a good apropos quote. They were super physical with him. They really sold out though. Gibb, first two games against Loyola, had made 14 threes between there and Chicago and here at Shea Fitz. And obviously, game plan wise, they sold out to take him away and to put two every time he came off action, two every time he came off screens. The couple good looks Gibb had didn't go down, but credit Loyola, they were super physical with him. Made it really hard. But, you know, one game would never define a player. You're defined by your career, and be hard-pressed to have a guy who's had a more, impressive career than Gibson Jimerson. I mean, he's set some records here from a numerical standpoint that I don't think will maybe in today's climate ever be approached. I mean, almost 2,500 points, you know, was it 415 threes, the amount of minutes he's played, games he's played. Field goals. I mean, you name it. His name is at the top of almost every statistical category, in a really proud and really high profile program. His name is at the top of every record book, and I think his greatest legacy will be his loyalty. I mean, to be somewhere for 6 years, never leave, never chase other stuff. He could have left many times before I got here, and certainly had a very easy out when they made the coaching change and the coach that recruited him that he played for 5 years wasn't here. He could have easily just said, hey, I'm going, doing something different. If I'm going to play for a new coach, I'm going to play for a new coach in a different place. And for him to return and help lay the foundation and help plant those seeds, I'm forever indebted to Gibson Jimerson. And the great part about him is, as good a player as he is, he's an even better human being, four-time all-conference selection, five-time all-academic selection, and a better human being than he is player.
And Isaiah Swope, who scored 30 points in that game, going out as he always does, and perhaps get some more if you hear from the NIT. And Swope, I was recently in Evansville doing a game and ran into and went out with some old college buddies, and one of them said, I'm telling you, when Swope was playing over in Newburgh, the word was he might be the best player in this town. He is just a marvelous, marvelous talent and incredible to watch. As Bob Ramsey would say, the Swope Show, and as Earl Austin Jr. said the game before last, he said, raise the curtain when Swope hit a 26-footer.
Oh, yeah, no, he's special. You know, I got to coach him for 2 years, and that guy's made up of all the right stuff. What an unbelievable competitor. So tough, so courageous. He couldn't even, from December on, he's not been able to practice. I mean, he practices maybe once a week because his knee. He's a guy that last year, in December last year of 23, had a piece of cartilage break off in a game. And, he decided he wanted to play through that, and the season wore on. And by end of January, early February, he was really dragging his leg. We went back in, did another MRI, had a complete tear of his lateral meniscus. And a lot of kids in that scenario, they're gonna shut it down, get the surgery. They don't want to do anything that would compromise their NIL value. You know what I mean? You're not gonna play with a complete tear. It's painful, and you're not gonna be as good. And it was early February, and he's like, no, I want to finish the season with my teammates. And that kid, I don't know how, knee brace, painkillers, didn't practice, played, wasn't nearly as good, but kind of willed himself in there, hit huge shots in the NIT, had the surgery in the summer, all season, came here, knee sort of bothered him in December, just inflammation. Couldn't practice, and that guy goes out after basically 5 days off after we played against Duquesne, and doesn't practice and goes, gets 26 and 30 in back-to-back games, on a leg and a half. And so unbelievable competitor. His courage, his toughness, made up of all the right stuff. One of the most, special young men I've ever coached. He just You know, he's incredible, incredible. But his courage, his toughness, competitiveness, those things are at the highest level. And he and really give both. We don't win 19 games without him. We're not, you know, don't win 11 league games without him. Those guys, like I said, the bloom's coming, but the seeds are planted. Those guys planted the seeds. And, you know, when I was at LMU, when I was in Indiana State, you know, I could see that in the first years. And when we did break through, and I think it was year three at both places, I went back and bought rings for all those guys that were the first two teams, because they're the ones who laid the, you know, laid the seeds, planted the seeds for the bloom that came, that third team reaped. And Isaiah Gibb, if when we do break through here, we'll certainly, those guys will be a part of that ring ceremony and a part of a big reason why we did.
And Robbie's going to be part of it, right? He said so himself, and, mm-hmm. and Robbie Avila is going to be a Billiken.
Yeah, Robbie, you know, kind of got, I don't know how we got there in the press conference, but was asked in the press conference. And, yeah, Robbie is going to be here, and that's a great foundational piece. You know, in today's world, it's, you know, to have a program that's still where you have a real culture and you're about real relationships and you're about, being, you know, really impacting young people and having these relationships where you can, you have relationships that are strong enough to handle the burden of truth, that you really, you know, are able to coach guys and coach them incredibly hard and be, you know, as honest as possible, but also, you know, love them in equal measure. And that allows those relationships to be strong enough to handle that. You know, we're going to try to be that. Rob is, you know, he's been incredible, but he's been that way his whole life. You know, he's the guy who played for one high school, one AAU team. He's not a, you know, transfer, run, do this. Could he go somewhere and make more money? Of course he could. You know, he's one of the best, you know, centers in college basketball. He's, you know, he's an all-league player in the A-10. He could have made a lot more money leaving Indiana State and going somewhere other than St. Louis. But, you know, I think he trusts us. I think he's got a long-term vision for what he wants to be, what he wants to accomplish. And, you know, he came here to try to win a championship. We came up short in the regular season and tournament. But having him as a building block piece, and I think we'll have a number of other guys back as well, that's going to give us a chance to go in the portal and this spring and have a real direction in terms of what we need, what we're building around, and hopefully be in a much better situation than we were this year coming in, you know, in April.
Well, I'm very curious to see how it all turns out. And then this is just the last thing here, and it kind of they tie together, because Kobe Johnson, I think if you don't have him, it doesn't work, because you had so many injuries and issues going on. Kobe stepped up when he had to, and there's another senior I know that was so meaningful to you because you were shorthanded in so many different ways.
Yeah, no, Kobe's, you know, his growth and trajectory as a player, I mean, he had some phenomenal games for us, and he was just a rock all year. So much of what he does, is what I would call like invisible plays, you know, things that don't get box score validation. He obviously had some really big games, you know, VCU, we won at home and at St. Joe's. And I mean, you know, he had some big games scoring wise, and he had a career year offensively when you look at what he did, but he brings so much value. He's such a great defender, you know, takes care of the ball. He alleviated some of the burden on Isaiah. He was thrust into what I would think, you know, was, you know, maybe a bigger role than what we had thought because of all the injuries. But, man, did he step into it and embraced it and thrived in it. I know he didn't play as well as he wanted to in D.C., but when you look at his year in totality, another guy just like Isaiah and Gibb, that, man, did they plant some seeds. His competitiveness, the things he did for us defensively, his ability to alleviate some of the ball handling pressure on Swope, the way he shot the ball for most of the year. I mean, he made more threes this year, I think, than he made in his previous 3 years of college combined, and did it while shooting close to 40% from three. Best his turnover ratio on the team. Unbelievable individual defender. Like I said, so many things that don't show in the box score. Kobe had a terrific year, helped us immensely, and hopefully helped himself in terms of, you know, what his opportunities are to play beyond college. And I think he put himself with this year in position to have a chance to do that if he chooses.
Well, I hope you get that call today from the NIT. More basketball to come, hopefully. And thank you for all these visits. It's so appreciated, and we appreciate your contributions, not only on Sports on a Sunday Morning, but on our coaches' shows, post-games. Thank you, Coach, and all the best today.
Appreciate it, Tom. Thanks so much. Enjoy. We'll catch up soon, and we'll see you when you get back in town.
Absolutely. Head coach of the St. Louis Billikens, Josh Schertz, with us on KMOX, sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. This is Sports on a Sunday Morning. We're in Jupiter, Florida. We'll talk some hockey next, though. Big, big event going on in St. Louis, and not to mention the St. Louis Blues back after
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday Morning. Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here's Tom Ackerman on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Coming to you from the Cardinals spring training home, Jupiter, Florida. Great to be with you. Tonight's game, Blues and Ducks, has been moved to 7 p.m. at Enterprise Center due to the Blues' travel issues after last night's game in Minnesota. They won that game 5-1. Jordan Kyrou logged his fifth career hat trick, and he's now three shy of his third consecutive 30-goal season. The Blues are going to honor Captain Braden Schenn on his 1,000-game milestone during a pregame ceremony tonight. Again, that has been moved to 7 o'clock, the Blues and the Ducks at Enterprise Center. Meanwhile, it's not the only hockey going on. As of this past Wednesday, the ACHA National Championships are back in St. Louis for the third time in 4 years, in what will be 6 of 7 years between 22 to 2028. And you exercise the option to stage the 2026 event here too, Craig Barnett. You're the executive director of the ACHA. Thanks for being with us on KMOX.
Well, thank you, Tom. Very excited to be part of your show, and we're very excited to be back here in St. Louis.
You know, we had in the news a storm that has wreaked havoc around the area. Knocked out power at Centene Community Ice Center, didn't it? Sent Saturday's games to four different rinks in the area.
We had some fun with that. That's for sure. You know, it's a big event that we do here, as you may know. We have 84 college teams here playing 119 games to crown five national champions, and it's a big undertaking. And we start planning this every year in September with an organizational committee group, and we meet a couple times a month. And you know, we feel that we're pretty prepared when we get here, trying to eliminate any surprises. But that's one surprise that happened here Saturday that you can't really prepare for. We prepare as well as we can, and we're surrounded by great professionals, you know, the facility manager Jeremy at Centene and his staff, and overall we survived it. We were fortunate to be in St. Louis, such a great community, and you know, I like to say that it's a Midwest hospitality where you have other ice rinks in town here that all kind of collaborated with us to find a home for all of our games yesterday. And, you know, so I tip my hat to all those people at McKendree University and some private rinks here in town. We were able to reschedule all of our games and get them done yesterday. And we're thankful to be back on Centene right now playing hockey.
Craig, do you see the growth within those universities and those programs? Can you see the change from year to year in how much they're prioritizing hockey?
Absolutely. You know, and it all, you know, it all starts, you know, at the youth levels. I mean, ACHA, in our NCAA hockey, I mean, it has become such a different sport, you know, especially from what I played a long time ago, but it gets better and better every year, you know, and like I said, it starts at the youth levels and in a city like St. Louis, where you have a lot of such a strong St. Louis Blues alumni here that they chose to stay in this area after their careers. And, you know, they have children and they grow up and become hockey players. And they're also involved in the coaching aspect. And, you know, that's where these young kids develop. And as they continue to grow up the ladder of development in the hockey world, you know, we just have so many more better hockey players than we did years ago. And the growth of college hockey, you know, it's growing. You know, at the NCAA level, it's grown slowly, but it's growing now. You know, when you look at Lindenwood and so forth that are now you know, were ACHA programs, and they still have ACHA programs, but, you know, the example of Lindenwood is now they're also NCAA Division I. And with the ACHA, you know, we have 487 teams playing this year across 46 states. And you know, that's a byproduct of developing young hockey players. And, you know, now they have opportunities to continue playing hockey, you know, when they go to school as student athletes.
Of course, the Frozen Four is coming to St. Louis next month. So, final thing for you here, just what are people saying around the country about St. Louis just in general as a hockey town, as has been coined the heartland of hockey?
It's you know, we've all been different cities and across the country and Canada and so forth. But I find, you know, St. Louis being that mid-size market, you know, in the NHL, compared to some larger cities and so forth, but the hospitality and the people are just incredible. You know, it's typical, you know, like I said, Midwest hospitality. It's for us, it's the perfect match. It's a central location since we have programs across the country. It's such a great central location. The facilities are fantastic, but I just always go back to what everyone else tells me as well, is that they have a great experience here. They meet so many nice people that are very welcoming and you know, hospitable. And so we enjoy it. You know, for us right now, it's like the Omaha of college baseball. You know, St. Louis for the ACHA has just been a wonderful partner. And, you know, it all starts at the top with the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, Mr. Zimmerman, the president there, and his staff are very vested into the ACHA with having us coming back, and as well as the St. Louis Sports Commission, and as well as the you know, Centene Community Ice Center and Maryville University Hockey Center. So couldn't do it without all the support of the people in this city that love hockey, and we always look forward to this, even with the tornadoes. It brings us all together.
Absolutely. The American Collegiate Hockey Association Executive Director is Craig Barnett. Thank you for being here, the national championships here in St. Louis, and have a wonderful rest of your experience. We look forward to catching up with you for years and years.
Thank you very much, Tom, and all the best to you down there in Jupiter, Florida.
Thank you. We will have much more on the Cardinals coming up next hour on KMOX.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omacid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
2-2 pitch.
This is the Graybar Sports on a Sunday morning.
And there's a high fly ball. That's into deep left field. It might go.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
And it's gone! A slammer for Nolan Arenado!
Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here's Tom Ackerman on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Great to be back with you. Another hour of sports on a Sunday morning coming to you from Jupiter. We will do the same thing next Sunday. The Cardinals will break camp on March 23rd, but we will be here sports on a Sunday morning from Roger Dean Chevrolet Stadium, and then they will head to Memphis for an exhibition game before returning to St. Louis and getting ready for March 27th against the Minnesota Twins. We are that close to opening day. I want to tell you about a couple of things about opening day here in just a second that I'm going to be involved in that I can't wait. I cannot wait to do. But first things first, let me tell you about the lineup today here in Jupiter. The Cardinals are taking on the Marlins. We'll have the game for you on KMOX. John, Ricky, Klaibs, Ryan Schulte, they are all there getting ready for that. And that is going to be a 12:10 first pitch. It's going to be a 12 o'clock pregame. So we look forward to that visit with those guys. And Sonny Gray making the start. Gray has officially been named the starter for opening day. No shocker there. The rotation is just about set. Ollie Marmol has in his mind what he wants it to be. There's still going to be a discussion behind closed doors, and after that, they will reveal what that rotation looks like moving forward. But for today, it's Gray against the Marlins, Cal Quantrill. He is a right-hander, and he'll be pitching against the righty, Gray. Here's the lineup for the Cardinals against Quantrill. Leading off and playing shortstop today will be Mason Winn. Winn is hitting 103 in the spring, so he certainly wants to get a little more offense going. He did single and score in the first inning yesterday in a 9-5 romp over the Blue Jays. The Cardinals just went wild offensively. They finally broke out. They had 16 hits yesterday. They really struggled offensively for the most part up until then. Also in the lineup today, batting second is Lars Nootbaar. He's not struggled. He's hitting .310 down here. He had a home run yesterday, his first of the spring. He has 7 RBIs. Also, Wilson Contreras is in the lineup. Contreras hitting .357 down here. He's the DH batting third. Brendan Donovan is the second baseman today. He is hitting cleanup. Ivan Herrera will be the catcher. Herrera has been looking really good at the plate. He gets on base. He delivers. He slugs. His slugging percentage is 11. His OPS is 1162. On base plus slugging percentage together. He's been really good. Alec Burleson hit a home run yesterday and drove in 2 with a base hit. So he had to really come out of that feeling a lot better. And again, these are important things, these results. I know we talk about the process all the time, but the results at this point, you want to start seeing. You can't just flip a switch and go right into March 27th. I mean, you want to see some product of all of the hard work and adjustments that they're trying to make. Nolan Gorman had a couple of hits on Friday night. We'll see if he can get it rolling today. He is playing third base as Arenado gets a day off. Victor Scott II is the center fielder today. He has been scorching down here, .345 batting average. He's stolen 5 bases as well. Michael Ciani can steal bases. He had 20 last season. Problem is he hasn't been able to get on base. Ciani's hitting just .061. He is the right fielder today, but Scott versus Ciani continues to be a conversation as to who's going to play center field. And then you have Lars Nootbaar can also play center. Jose Barrero, if he makes the team as a bench player, can play center field. We'll see how they play it. But that's the lineup today. Winn, Nootbaar, Contreras. Donovan Herrera, Burleson, Gorman Scott, and Ciani. Other things going on today, we have Blues hockey tonight. There has been a time change. They had a little trouble traveling back from Minnesota, so it's now a 7 o'clock game tonight. For the Blues at home against the Ducks. Jordan Kyrou with a hat trick last night as the Blues won and got themselves to within 2 points of a playoff spot still. Kyrou with the hat trick. And City with a win over Seattle, 1-0. They have 4 consecutive clean sheets to start the season. They're the only team in Major League Soccer that hasn't given up a goal. Ben Lunt was the goalkeeper last night because it's a broken bone in the hand for Roman Berkey. We're going to get an update from Lutz Fahnensteel in minutes on that. Sporting director is going to join us here at 11:15. We heard an hour ago from Jerry Palm, the bracketologist from CBS Sports. If you want to go back and listen to that, I think it's a good breakdown of not only what he thinks the bracket will look like when it comes out at 5 o'clock today on Selection Sunday, but also who he thinks could be a scary team to face. And he noted 2 local teams, Mizzou and Illinois, among those 2. Of course, we talked about SIUE as well, being what he says will be a 16 seed in the tournament. And we heard from Josh Schertz a little bit earlier on the show. He is awaiting a call from the NIT, says that they'll play in that. But if they don't get a call from the NIT, he's going to likely shut it down for the season. When we come back, we'll hear from Lutz Fahnensteel, sporting director, St. Louis City SC. Can't wait to talk to Lutz. I'm Tom Ackerman in Jupiter, Florida, on the spring training home of the Cardinals, KMOX.
KMOX.
Edward Wright.
Get in there. Yes!
Get it, baby! Oh, baby! Edward Lubin!
Joey Zanaboni, Dale Schilly with the call on Y98 last night. I was watching it from down here and listening to it as well. St. Louis City SC beat Seattle 1-0. They have 4 consecutive clean sheets to start the season. We are joined by sporting director for St. Louis City SC, Lutz Fahnensteel. It's always a pleasure, my friend, as I come to you from Jupiter, Florida, the spring training home of the Cardinals. How are things in St. Louis?
Yeah, good. I can see you actually sitting there yesterday watching the game with a nice cocktail in your hand.
Yeah.
Enjoying the sunshine. Yeah, it's good, you know, getting a home win finally, like second game at home. And I think especially against a team like Seattle, which was our bogey team so far, having played them 4 times, 7 picked up a point. And yesterday getting that win was definitely a very important step forward.
Well, you continue to lock it down defensively. But before we talk about Lunt and Berkey, how about just overall the way that you are playing defensively and limiting opportunities and chances for other teams?
Yeah, you know, really, really solid. I think the way we defend as a group, and defending is not just meaning the back 5 or the back 3. I think it starts with the strikers who are closing down the spaces. I think that's overall really impressive so far the whole season. Again, yesterday there was, I think, 1 or 2 shots on target, which is not much. Did Seattle really had a lot of clear-cut chances? No, they didn't. So it's really a big improvement when it comes to that, looking into the last years, actually, how we structure, how we organize our defensive lineup. And, you know, that's usually what wins you games. You don't need to always have that offensive firework and create 6-7 chances. If you're smart, you defend well, and you use the chances in the right moment, or a set piece like yesterday that really gives you the points. And as a group, Tom, we really defend well so far.
Yes, you have. And Lunt in goal for you, and Leuven with the goal, and City wins it 1-0. It was close there at the end, though. They call for a penalty shot, and then, oh, hold on a second, there's a handball. They went back and looked at it, and indeed a handball, and it turns out to be a finish for City, 1-0. That was something. And then, you know, just overall, the fact that you had to make the change, my obvious question is, how is Berkey? What is the latest there with his hand?
Yeah, you know, it was in the morning, of course, a bit of a shock. So we had a normal training session on Friday, and he made a save. He got the ball a bit awkward on his hand. And, you know, we didn't really look like anything crazy. So we waited for Saturday morning and see how it went. And then we did the x-ray, and it's obviously a fracture, but it's nothing crazy. So we're not talking about an extremely long time here, but we will see a specialist tomorrow. And then we have to make that a last final decision. But then again, you know, it happens in football. Injuries are part of the game. And, of course, if the captain, the best goalkeeper in the league, is out on a short notice, that could actually rattle a team. But then again, we have a good group. And as you saw, we believe in Ben Lund's quality. You know, he's an experienced goalkeeper. He's around for a long time. He works really well together with Roman, and really all the compliments from myself, being a former goalkeeper, very solid, very confident performance, and keeping a clean sheet is always great in the first game of the season. So we are obviously looking forward for Roman to return, but in the meantime, there is a lot of belief and a lot of trust in Ben Lund, who had a good game and a great preseason, by the way, as well. So absolutely no problems here.
And just a little bit more on Lunt. He and Roman are very close, aren't they? They're really good friends. Roman shot him a text in the morning just to give him a heads up, but it was the day of.
Yeah, Tom, we're all very close friends, as you know. But it's very important, I think, when it comes to this goalkeeper hierarchy. If you have two guys who are roughly at the same level and they fight for the spot, you do not have this relationship. So I think here, it's pretty much clear set. Roman is our star player. Roman is our DP. Roman is an absolutely top goalkeeper. I would call it an international top goalkeeper. So for Ben, as a second choice, it's very tough because you're training every day. You work really hard, but then you need to be ready in this right moment. And I think a relationship them to build where I think the basic situation, the starting situation is very clear. Roman is number one. And Ben is number two. You need to have a special character to live actually in that role as the second choice, as the backup. And that only works out well if there is a good relationship between the number one and the number two. Having said that, you know, being a goalkeeper myself before, I was the worst number two in the world. Because if you cannot accept that you're being on the bench and the other guy is better, then you create a problem for yourself and for the team. And there we are really fortunate that with Birki Lund and also Olivares, have a very, very clear structure where our goalkeeper coach, Alex Langer, does a fantastic job. And I think that pays off in the end of the day.
That's a really good point. What about in midfield? You had Akil Watts with Chris Durkin and Edward Leuven. If you could get into that a little bit and your change in formation.
That was, I think, a bit of a surprise for the fans. You know, see Akil on a kind of, I would call it, wide 10 position. More an offensive position. He normally plays as a wing back or a full back or as a six. But I think he worked out well because he's very athletic. He works hard. He got a few good runs behind their back three. And I think this whole combination with Durkin, which is a warrior, you know, like a hard tackling, hard working guy, and obviously Edu, which scored a screamer. We haven't spoken about that. I mean, it was a wonderful free kick, like really beautiful. I was actually surprised that Joey didn't jump down the balcony yesterday after we scored that one. But yeah, it was a different formation. I think it caught Seattle a bit by surprise because they didn't really know where Watts will show up during that game. And that's something, really, really smartly done by the coaching staff to get a bit of a surprise in there as well.
Yeah, it was really something. Leuven has a lot of confidence. There's no question about that. And you're starting to see it now. Here we go again with this team. When they start to play well together, it is something to behold. And you know, who could have anticipated giving up no goals? Let me ask an alternate question. Is there something that you would like to see this team do better right now? Is there something that is lacking early in the season?
You know, we don't really want to jinx that now because, as you see, obviously people coming into the stadium and they want to see, especially in America, high-scoring games. And people, of course, they love a 5-1 or a 5-2 more than a 1-0. But when it comes to the whole season, I think winning games like yesterday is very important. So what would I change right now? I mean, right now, obviously, I don't want to change anything, but there is always room for improvement. There is, we also have to be honest, it was not the perfect game, you know, and it never is a perfect game. So can we be better with the ball? Can you create more chances? Of course we can. Can we have a different setup sometimes in a while to get a bit more behind their back four? Yes, we can do that as well. But if it's not necessary, it's nothing which has to be changed right now. I think you develop over the course of a season, or you develop over the course of the first half of the season. Right now, I think we should be happy what we get out of the team. We should be happy with the results. You know, I said in the start of the season, the first five games are tremendously difficult, playing against some top teams in the league. Also next week, because a special game in Philly. So where we are standing right now, I think it's pretty impressive, having not conceded a goal in four games. Not many teams in MLS history have done that. We also haven't done that so far at all. So I think that is something, Tom, we can and we should build up on.
Absolutely. You know, there's a coach that I've talked to many times through the years who says, and it just happened this past season for him, that he won games. They found a way to win the football game, and they walked off the field a winner. And he said, if people can have whatever narrative they want and talk about our team and shape it however they want us to do certain things, and I don't care. I will go out there, and we're going to do it the way we do it, and we're going to find ways to win. And that guy is Eli Drinkwitz, who was on the pitch last night delivering the match ball. I saw that you had a chance to exchange some words with him. He is something else. And the crowd really got into it, didn't they, that the Mizzou players and coach were there?
Yeah, it was really, really nice. You know, I never met him before, so we had a good talk yesterday. It was funny because he actually followed up what I did before in my life. So we had a good talk, and actually we agreed that I will come up there to Colombia once they start training and playing again to kind of shadow him a little bit to see actually how Mizzou is set up, how they prepare for a game, how they do play in a game. So it's something which I haven't seen before. And, you know, I'm always, even though I'm already have gray hair, I still feel young by heart. There's lots of things you can learn and pick up from other sports. So that's something I'm really looking forward to. Very interesting personality, very, very open-minded. It was great to meet him, to be honest.
Yeah, he's good. I appreciate you very much. Thank you for the update on Berkey. Thank you for visiting with us, and congrats on a great win last night for St. Louis City SC.
I'm very surprised you didn't ask me about the game against Philly next week.
Yeah, I usually do have a preview, don't I? Well, hey, while I have about 30 seconds, give me a little preview of that.
Well, I mean, you know, top team, they're doing well. Bradley Connell, their manager, so it's a special game for us as well. It's a special game for him as well. We're really looking forward to play against Philly, to play against Bradley. That's one of the teams I have the closest ties to in general, where the sporting director is something like my brother. We worked before together in Germany for many, many years, so I'm really looking forward to go to Philly next week.
I'm sure that you are, and I look forward to that as well. I think that is going to be something as we watch you celebrate and then move on to the next match, and that certainly will be a big one against Bradley in Philadelphia. Lutz, thank you very much for the time again. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom. Have a nice Sunday in the sun.
You too. Lance Lutz Fahnenstiel with us on Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX. When we come back, the president of baseball operations of the St. Louis Cardinals, John Mozeliak, with us live from Jupiter, Florida on KMOX. And today, the Stiefel Sports Studio comes to you from Jupiter, Florida, across the street from Roger Dean Chevrolet Stadium. Let's go to the ballpark now. We're joined by Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak, as the Cardinals take on the Marlins this afternoon. Good morning, Mo, and good afternoon here in Florida.
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks again for the accommodations, as always. You provide us with a great workspace, and it's been a good ride down here, so we appreciate it.
Good. Glad to hear that.
Yep, absolutely. You have a busy week here coming. Opening day is March 27th. 1 week from today, you will break camp and get ready to head north. Just your overall thoughts on where you are right now. I can tell you, for me, calling the game yesterday was a lot of fun. Offense is fun. The Cardinals put 9 on the board and beat the Blue Jays 9-5.
Yeah, that was nice to watch. With regard to what this week looks like, obviously there's going to be a lot of transition going on in the sense of trying to narrow down our roster and really positioning ourselves for the following week when we open in St. Louis. But in the meantime, We want to, you know, communicate with our players, let them know which direction they're heading, i.e. Memphis or St. Louis. We'll probably make final roster decisions some point next weekend. But in the meantime, we'll start to get people, for logistical purposes, understanding where they're headed. And so there'll be a lot of meetings, a lot of talking, and hopefully over the next 72 hours, a lot of clarity for some people.
Yeah, most recently, the more, I guess, a flurry of moves following Phil Maton. You know, Graceffo optioned, O'Brien moves to minor league camp. You had Munoz as well. A little more clarity, I would imagine, at bullpen after the Maton move?
Yeah, I think everybody can sort of like squint and see where this is headed. So, you know, there's still a few bubble questions or some uncertainty with what exactly we're going to look like, but we're going to allow, you know, this week to play out, and then we'll try to make those decisions by some point next weekend.
And when it comes to the rotation, are you still at the moment stretching out Matthew Liberatore? Would I be accurate to say that you still have seven going for a five-man rotation?
Yeah, that's right. He'll definitely get one more opportunity to stretch out. But clearly it's easier to take that step back and try to have someone that hasn't pitched more than an inning or two to try to get four or five out of. So trying to ramp these guys up, give us as much flexibility as possible. And, you know, fingers crossed, these guys keep throwing the ball well.
McGreevy's had a good camp, gives up the home run to Juan Soto, and then really showed something, didn't he? How he was able to bear down and finish that Mets game strong.
Yeah, absolutely. That was great to see. Obviously, as you pointed out, gave up the solo shot to Soto, which was a very loud home run. he definitely didn't miss it. But, yeah, McGreevy has had a really good camp, and it's great to watch.
And then, you know, we've talked bullpen starters, those competitions going on right now. But back to Maton, the point was made by Ollie, and I think you alluded to this as well. This is a move that appears to also be designed to take some pressure off of your young players as they develop. So Maton would handle high-leverage situations, whereas, let's say, a Roycroft, if he were to make the team, wouldn't have to do that right away. Would I be accurate in saying that?
Yes, but it's also equally about just, I've always like felt like when you have a strong bullpen, you have someone in there that can help younger guys understand, like, hey, sixth inning, if such and such gets on, you need to start thinking you might have to get up. So it's almost like having that like additional coach in the bullpen, but sometimes having it come from a player, players respond better. So it's just another voice to help these guys understand what daily preparation looks like, what in-game preparation looks like. And then ultimately, when you get that call, how quickly you prepare and how you then adjust into a game-like setting. So, you know, he checks a lot of boxes for us. He is a player or pitcher that I've had interest in over the last couple of years. So I was really glad that we were able to bring him on board, because I do think he'll be a benefit for us.
Phil Maton, kind enough to visit with all of us as well, and we had a chance to talk to him. I chatted with Jose Barrero yesterday before the game. Here I go, just like a lot of people, tantalized by his talent. I'm certain that's why he's here, is that you all wanted to see what you could tap into there. Barrero vying for a spot on your bench, Mo. What do you like about Jose Barrero?
Well, I think he gives you a lot of flexibility defensively. He looks very comfortable on any part of the infield. He looks comfortable anywhere in the outfield. He's an elite athlete. And, you know, I think from an offensive standpoint, we see signs of things that we're uber excited about. And then there's times where you see the swing and miss. And I think one of the reasons he hasn't had that you know, really sustained major league career is the really the swing and miss and the inconsistencies of the plate. And, you know, that's something that we are working on and trying to help him adjust to. Because if he does, I mean, he's a really, really useful player.
And then finally, you know, when it comes to roster decisions, I'm looking at center field. And obviously we see the numbers. I mean, Victor Scott's put up great numbers. Michael Ciani hasn't been able to match those offensive numbers. How much do numbers in spring training factor into a decision when it comes to something like that? Center field, Victor Scott II, Michael Ciani.
Well, I definitely think when you look at spring training performance, you tend to always remind yourself of not to put too much weight on what you see in camp. But it's hard to ignore when someone's having a really strong camp and you know, apparently in showing that he's making the adjustments that you want it to see happen. So as much as I'd like to say you're going to just totally discount spring training, it is a variable that you weigh in on. And again, we're going to use this remaining part of the week to see how everything shakes out. But there's no doubt he's had a really strong camp.
And then there's also something else at play, too, which I understand, which, and this isn't just Ciani and Scott, but just overall, you've talked about towing the line here. You have a short-term goal to reach, which you want to be successful in 25. You have a long-term goal to reach, which is to continue the success of this organization for years to come under Heim Bloom and this front office. Can you go into a little bit, just take us behind the curtain a little bit as to how that collaboration continues to evolve between yourself, between Heim, Rob Serfolio, and crew?
Well, the reality is it's been our model for 30 years. You know, we've always tried to be as competitive as possible during the season, but also have one eye on the future. And so, you know, really it's my hope that, you know, the next leadership group kind of understands how we think about it and understands that our fan base, you know, wants to see a quality product. And, you know, we don't want to go down the path where we have to have 3 or 4 years of just a complete teardown and, you know, where baseball's not even that relevant and you try to rebuild yourself back up. I mean, this is a very, very competitive industry right now. And you have a lot of things that are changing that, you know, perhaps weren't part of the playbook 15 years ago, that are different now in terms of who's spending, who's not. And so for the Cardinals to keep this relevancy in this league is something that we're definitely focused on trying to accomplish. And hopefully, even if this year goes well, we still are thinking about what 26, 27, and beyond will look like.
And, you know, relevancy in the league also means fans in seats too, right? I mean, doesn't that – how much of that factors in wanting to make sure that you get people through the turnstiles this year, get your fan, you know, the fan base well. I mean, they understand what you're doing, but they also are a fan base that wants to win. They want to be entertained. You're in an interesting spot. I wouldn't say unique to other teams, but, you know, one that not everybody goes through.
Well, I certainly understand it. And, you know, that's that, you know, really tight line I'm trying to walk right now. And then hopefully we're able to accomplish that and allow for the product on the field to be something that our fan base truly appreciates. I mean, look, it's hard to keep everybody 100% happy in this business because, you know, a lot of times they feel we're just not doing enough or not being aggressive enough. And I certainly understand that, but it's a challenging business right now, and as the finances change and as we try to adjust into a new world on that, like hopefully we can figure out a path back to where we were and consistently competing for October and hopefully deep runs into the World Series.
Appreciate your time, as always, on the program, and thanks again for all that you do for us as a radio station here down in Jupiter, and we'll catch up with you real soon.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. John Mozeliak, Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, taking us into the organization's thinking here in spring training, some of the roster decisions that have come their way. And the Cardinals will be playing the Marlins today at 12:10. Sonny Gray is going to make the start. Cardinals will bat first, though, on KMOX, as they are the road team today. When we come back, Bernie Miklas discusses the Cardinals, and I might ask him a little March Madness as well. It's sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio in Jupiter, Florida. Back in a moment.
I'm Joan Robinson. Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning. Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here's Tom Ackerman on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Hey, I want to wish a happy birthday yesterday to Sadie Steinbach. Sadie was here at the ballpark yesterday celebrating her birthday. That is awesome. No better place to celebrate than in spring training. Sadie Steinbach turned 15 yesterday down here on spring break with friends, went to the game yesterday. Big shout out to Sadie. By the way, she is an awesome basketball player. Very, very good. Joining us is Bernie Miklas and his visit, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. Good morning, Bernie. What's going on?
Good to be with you, my friend Tom Ackerman. I'm doing swell.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. Well, I just talked to John Mozeliak, and, you know, interesting, he kind of takes us into the room a little bit and sort of the philosophy. What I take from him is, you know, they have this new look reset of a front office. And he kind of said it there is they want Haim, and he hopes that Haim and Rob Serfolio and that group also understand that this organization, while they want to redevelop everything, they don't want it to be a 3 or 4 year teardown. That we're kind of just to paraphrase what he said. This is a team that still wants to stay competitive. Interesting situation they've found themselves in.
No, I understand what he's saying, but you know, I would point out one thing. They lost 91 games in 2023. They, because of their bullpen, they had a winning record, but they had one of the worst offenses in the National League. So over the last 2 years, they ranked 22nd in the majors in winning percentage. So I have an open mind about this year. I just refuse to just like dismiss any team for maybe doing better than what we expect. And that applies to every team that's got at least a fighting chance. So I'm not sure what the 2025 Cardinals do. But my point is, if this is another season where it's disappointing, they don't make the playoffs, maybe they really get worse instead of better, well, then that would be 3 years in a row where basically nothing was accomplished. So it's hard for me to sort of reconcile this idea. It's like, well, we don't want to get into a 3 or 4 year teardown. Well, this would be year three of a period of time where they just haven't gotten much done, and they still have more questions than answers. So I'm trying to figure out what's the difference. However, no, I don't think they ever had to do a whole teardown. They really don't. And I've never thought, well, just tear the whole thing down. I've never thought. But they also should be making decisions not just for 25, but how those decisions will affect 2026. And, just to anticipate a question, if you're sort of preparing for 26 and also trying to maybe put the best team on the field for 25, I'm not sure why Victor Scott doesn't fit into that. And so it's what my point is that the Cardinals are entitled to do whatever they want, but I don't blame any fan. I don't blame myself for being constantly confused about what exactly the objective is.
Well, I don't see a team much different than last year if they have Mats on it and they have Siani on it. I mean, well, not that they wouldn't be on it, but in my 26-man roster, which I have right here, I work on it every day depending on what they do in terms of moves. Now that they've added Maton and they got rid of – not rid of, but they sent down O'Brien, et cetera, I changed it up. It still has Matthew Liberatore in the rotation, and it still has Victor Scott at center field. If you're going to do it, why not do it right now? I mean, just, you know, take a gamble and have a little fun with it. It'll be interesting to see where they go. Just trying to read what they're doing, it sure sounds like they're going to do the opposite of what I just said.
Yeah, Cordy, I think you agree with me. We trust the instincts of Katie Wu, The Athletic, and Derek Gould of the Post-Dispatch. They get good information. They have a good sense of the way things are going to go. And it was very interesting to me this morning to read that both of them think Siani will be the starting center fielder and Scott will likely go to the minors. And I don't know what to do. I've been so like ticked off about this and some other stuff that I'm like actually, you know, running out of things to say in terms of expressing, you know, my frustration because what does Victor Scott have to do exactly? Like, you know, they didn't give him proper training and instruction in the minors. He was taking wrong routes to the ball. You know, he was taking bad first two steps when he's pursuing balls. They didn't have a full-time outfield instructor. It took a part-time hitting instructor, Ryan Ludwig, to suggest a leg kick, which kind of changed Victor Scott's season around. You know, his last 20 games in Memphis or so, he was really, really good. He came up to the major leagues. The first few games or so were quiet. But over the last 19 games, Victor Scott at the major league level last season hit .311. He had a .354 on base percentage. He had a .467 slugging percentage. He goes into spring and he's been their best hitter from start to finish. And he's also getting better in center field because of the work with John Jay. So my point is like, this sounds really jaded and I apologize, but what exactly is the point of spring training if a Victor Scott performs the way he does and he's not good enough to beat out Michael Ciani, if in fact it turns out that way? Well, like what, like, you know, and let me throw this in, Tom, because you and I and Kevin Wheeler and Matt Pauley have been talking about spring training and, well, the spring training stats matter. And I've always said, well, I just really don't pay much attention to them. But in this case, the Cardinals offense was doing so bad down there. I don't blame people for being concerned. But I look at Victor Scott in the spring he's had, and if he doesn't make the team, then we have our answer. Spring training stats absolutely do not matter. And that's not our opinion. That would be the opinion of the people setting this roster for 2025.
That's right. You know, I've looked at spectacular. Let's talk pitching for a minute. I mean, if you're going by spring training stats, Michael McGreevy should be in the rotation. I should throw his name in there, too. You can't fit six in there. You're not going to go with a six-man rotation. But Michael McGreevy, if you were ever going to do it, why wouldn't you do it right now? Just, you know, take a shot. And here's the answer to that question probably from the team is – that they want to see him start in the Memphis rotation and be that first call, and they're going to lean towards what they know. I just I'm ready to roll some dice, and I don't know that it's a big dice roll, honestly, with McGreevy.
Right. Well, the thing of it is the Cardinals box themselves in because no matter what, they're going to give the ball to Miles Michaelis every fifth day, and they're going to give the ball to Steven Matz every fifth day. Now, listen. They have $29 million tied up in both of these guys, called $30 million in both of those guys this year. And their philosophy, their policy has always been, well, we're paying these guys, and that's it. We're paying them. You know, that's why we're paying them to pitch. But the thing that's weird about it is like, well, you know, one way or the other, these guys are going to get paid. They're going to get paid if they pitch poorly. They're going to get paid if they don't pitch at all. Steven Matz's case, and I'm not trying to take a cheap shot, he's going to get paid no matter how many times he gets hurt. So I don't understand this idea that's like, well, we're paying them, so they're in the rotation. It just seems, okay, well, maybe stop talking about resets and ways and all that stuff. You know, yeah, there's a runway. It's a runway that's leading Michael McGreevy, probably leading Michael McGreevy and Victor Scott to the Memphis runway, not the St. Louis runway.
Bernie, I hope they sell the heck out of some tickets for opening day, but you on your latest video, one of your latest on YouTube, you talked about that and more, and I would direct everybody to the Bernie Show. We only have a minute here before we to be out at 11:55 for Cardinals, but your video series is excellent, my friend, on YouTube, the Bernie Show.
Well, yeah, it's good. And we got some changes coming up with that, and you know, be look forward to talking about that as well, but I appreciate everything I do here for KMOX and love being part of the Gas House gang. And we'll be back at 12 noon tomorrow doing that live streaming. And you can, you know, grab that on YouTube at any time.
Yes, we will. The Gas House Gang is on YouTube noon Monday through Friday. A lot of people are watching Bernie and listening to that show also. Thank you, Bernie.
Tom, have a great rest of your Sunday. Take care.
Thank you, buddy. The family's in town, so looking forward to catching up a little bit. And also, one other thing is that Vince Coleman is going to join me for breakfast on opening day. Go to KMOX.com/events. The Budweiser First Pitch Breakfast from KMOX is going to be unbelievable. Vince Coleman telling stories about the 80s. What more do you need? How about cocktails and breakfast? That is for you on opening day at Cardinals Nation, KMOX.com/events, to hang out with Vince Coleman on opening day. Thanks for joining us on KMOX.